I'm Tony Cox, and this is News and Notes. This week, Democratic loyalists, political junkies, and millions of television viewers have watched Michelle Obama, Hillary, and Bill Clinton step to the podium and narrate their hopes and goals for this political season. Tonight, Barack Obama will give a much-anticipated acceptance speech for his historic nomination in front of 75,000 people at Invesco Field in Denver. But what makes a good versus a great speech? And what great speeches inspire other speech writers? Joining me for a closer look at the art of public speaking are Susan Estrich, a professor of law and political science at the University of Southern California. She was also Mike Dukakis' presidential campaign manager in 1988. Chris Winston worked in the George H.W. Bush administration and was the first woman to head the speech writing staff at the White House. And Charlton McElwain, assistant professor of culture and communication at New York University. Welcome, all three of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's begin with this. I'm going to ask each of you the very same question out of the box, and that is this. Have we heard a great speech yet this week from the Democrats? Susan, you first.
I think we've heard three great speeches. I mean, I thought Michelle Obama was terrific on Monday night. I thought Hillary hit a home run on Tuesday night. And I thought Bill Clinton hit a home run on Wednesday night. The question, of course, is whether any of those speeches will actually move voters into Barack Obama's column. And the real definition of a great speech is one that not just entertains us or impresses us, but moves votes. And I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Well, what about you, Chris? Do you think you heard anything from anyone that suggests they were vote movers?
Well, I would have to disagree slightly. I'm sure Susan's surprised to hear that. But I thought Michelle Obama's speech was a good speech. I thought Hillary Clinton did a masterful job with a good speech. I thought Bill Clinton's speech was a great speech last night. But having said all of that, if the definition is moving voters, today's Gallup poll and Rasmussen poll tracking polls basically show no movement. This race is stalled at about a point or two. Obama's up a point today. He was up a point yesterday. So the speeches, if you look at numbers, haven't done much yet.
What do you say, Charlton?
Well, I agree with everyone thus far. I think they've all been good speeches, but the one that really blew me away that I didn't expect was John Kerry's speech last night. I thought he did a masterful job of defining John McCain and sort of placing this candidate McCain against the Senator McCain. And I think that was a good way of defining and showing the disconnect between him and his rhetoric.
Well, you're all experienced speech writers, so let's talk about what goes into making it. And Susan, my question is this. How many people does it take, and does the old adage, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, apply to speech writing as well?
I think so. I mean, I spent more of my time reviewing speeches than writing them. I find writing them extremely difficult. But I do remember back in 1980 when Ted Kennedy was on the verge of making a great speech. And I was sitting in Steve Smith's house, his brother-in-law's house, and he got a draft of the speech. And there must have been 10 people who wanted to take a look, take a crack. And Bob Schrum, who had been one of the primary drafters, maybe the primary drafter, was running around in the way only Schrum can, basically saying, keep your hands off this speech. If too many people get a hold of this speech, it's going to lose its magic. And I think there's some truth to that, actually.
You know, speaking of magic, Chris, catchphrases or memorable sound bites are always a part of great speeches. Here's a part of a speech from President John F. Kennedy's inauguration in 1961.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
So, Chris, does a lot of work go into creating these phrases, or do they simply grow organically out of the writing process?
Well, today, in this day and age, unlike back then, sound bites have become the sort of bread and butter of most speeches, in some ways, sadly, I think. Obviously, Ted Sorensen and John Kennedy, when they put that speech together, that was for a different kind of audience, a much more serious historic event. And it's not to say conventions aren't, but it's usually a different tone that you have for a convention than you do for an inauguration. And the kind of language you use tends to be less flowery and rhetorical. So it does make a difference, I think, in terms of venues. Now, having said that, you know, over the last few days, we've had some funny lines that people have used. Hillary Clinton's comment about the sisterhood of the traveling pantsuits, as a person who wears pantsuits, I loved that comment. I thought it was a very funny joke. And there have been several over the course of the last few days, but I have not heard what I would call a very lofty phrase that has caught my attention, at least up to now.
Well, Charlton, let's turn our attention to tonight and Barack Obama's speech. But before we talk about that, I want to play another speech from someone who was a master at giving speeches. Ronald Reagan is who I'm speaking of. We have a clip here from one of his speeches in 1981 at his inauguration.
Can anyone look at the record of this administration and say, well done? Can anyone compare the state of our economy when the Carter administration took office with where we are today and say, keep up the good work? Can anyone look at our reduced standing in the world today and say, let's have four more years of this?
So, Charlton, does Barack Obama need to give a Ronald Reagan-esque speech tonight?
Actually, I don't think he needs to. I think he needs really to take that idea from Barbara Jordan in 1976 when she said the necessity is to not only point out the problems of the present, but to be able to point out and define solutions. And I think that's really what Obama needs to do tonight, to really be concrete, to be able to say, look, there are some problems, but here are some things that we can do that will work. Here's how they will work, and here's how we're going to put them in place.
Well, in fact, speaking of Barbara Jordan, I'm going to come back to you, Susan, for your comments about this, because many important speeches from Martin Luther King to Malcolm X, Jesse Jackson, have focused on themes of race. And here's a clip from one of the great speeches at a Democratic convention. It is Barbara Jordan, 1976.
Tonight, here I am. And I feel that notwithstanding the past, that my presence here is one additional bit of evidence that the American dream need not forever be deferred.
Is there such a thing, Susan, as a, African-American style speech? Is that an example of it?
Well, I'm probably not the right one to ask that question to. I think it's more about a great speech. And because race has been one of the great challenges of our time, obviously, I remember Jesse Jackson's speech well from the 1984 convention. I mean, there are moments when addressing that great issue brings out a level of eloquence that's memorable. But the problem I think Barack Obama faces tonight is that everyone knows he gives a great speech. I mean, if this were a contest for Speaker of the United States, the best speech maker, I think there's no question that Barack Obama would be ahead by 10 points, 20 points off the charts. And that's in some ways a disadvantage, because giving a great speech, you know, electrifying the crowd, holding 75,000 people, may not be the right test for Barack Obama tonight. I think the test, more important, is does he say something which can convince Americans that he will make their lives better if he's president? I once sat down with Bill Clinton, and I said, enough with the big speeches. Give me three reasons, this is when he was a candidate, that my life as a wife, as a mother, as a hard worker, will be better if you're president. And that's the challenge for Obama.
I want to return to the race question in just a second with you, Tarleton. But before I do, Susan raised something that I'd like to address with Chris, and that's this. Is it a different amount of preparation or a different kind of preparation to prepare a speech for an outside venue like tonight at Invesco Field versus perhaps having given it inside the Pepsi Center, a smaller enclosed venue?
I do think there probably is going to be some hurdles they'll have to get over in terms of the sound of a stadium on that side of that size. I mean, we've all been in a baseball stadium or a football stadium and listened to the loudspeaker system echo. And, you know, for someone like Obama, who is an extraordinary speaker, that may be a problem. Just the size and the acoustics of the place may be a problem. I would, if I can, would go back to Susan's point as well. I completely agree that he needs to do more than he has done so far in terms of giving Americans a reason to vote for him. I think his message of change, which has gotten him this far, but seems to have stalled in recent weeks. And I think it's because, in part, it is a slogan, and it has become a very much a one-dimensional kind of change. I'm not George Bush. He's bad. I'm not him, and John McCain is. I mean, that's basically what we've got. And I think it's incumbent upon him tonight that he must convince Americans not only how in some very concrete, specific way he'll make their lives better, but that he is also, that he has the judgment experience, that he is fit to lead as commander-in-chief. That's a big hurdle for him tonight, I think.
Charlton, one of the things that Hillary Clinton did in her speech successfully, I think, was to talk about the role and the power, the empowering of women vis-a-vis her candidacy. So tonight, does Barack Obama talk about race, or does he stay away from it entirely?
I think he does have to talk about race, and I think he has not to to be afraid to do so. I think what he needs to do is to place himself, this historical moment, in this historical narrative that starts with the ideals of the founders, moves right through the civil rights movements to here with Barack Obama. The thing I think he has to do, though, is to frame it as progress. Something we did. I stand here because us as Americans put aside our prejudices, our resentment, our hatred of others, and have come to the point where they can nominate me and envision me being president of the United States.
We're going to bring our conversation to a close with this. All of you, I said, are experienced at speech writing. And in terms of the speech that we are going to hear tonight, how much of it is actually written by the candidate himself or herself? Susan?
That totally depends on the candidate. My guess is, knowing a little bit about Barack Obama, that he has been deeply involved in the writing of this speech. Jack Kennedy, I once sat with Ted Sorensen on a plane, and he said to me, Jack Kennedy came up with a lot of the great lines that he gave. I think everybody who approaches an acceptance speech at a convention, and I've been around for a number of them, becomes involved personally in the speech. But for somebody like Barack Obama, who is a writer, who is a man of words, you know, I think we're going to be hearing a lot of his words tonight.
Really quickly, Chris, less than 30 seconds, would you say the candidate writes half, in some cases, his or her speech?
You know, I would totally agree with Susan on this. It really depends upon the candidate. And the candidate, some of them, you know, as an Obama, who I've read some of his books, is an extraordinarily good writer. So I would think that he will be involved heavily. Others, not so much. I would expect John McCain to probably have gotten a lot of help and expertise from Mark Salter, who's written books with him, who's a very fine writer.
Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, our time is out. We'll have to end the discussion right there. Susan Estrich is a professor of law and political science at the University of Southern California. Chris Winston worked in the George H.W. Bush administration. And Charlton McElwain is an assistant professor of culture and communication at New York University.